Today I was planning to be giving the sermon, and I was hoping to actually start a series of sermons on Passover and the lead up to Passover, and I was thinking of dealing with the bread of Passover. And in preparation, what I thought I might do was listen to a sermon that I gave back in 2009 as a means of preparation. I listened to that and I thought, well, really, the amount of time I got to actually spend preparing it, I've already done that and already done the preparation. So rather than go ahead and give the entire thing again, I thought it may be best just to play it. But there was one point that I touched on within the sermon, which I don't go into any detail, and that is the subject of quarantine. Quarantine. Now, it doesn't apply to the same degree as it used to in the church, because it applies just the same way as it ever has done within the church, but the application of it isn't as great as it was before, because we don't actually meet as regular church gatherings in the same way. Many people are listening in over the internet and therefore not actually attending church services in quite the same way. But what I want to do today in the sermonette is to examine the subject of biblical quarantine in the time I've got available and show there are two forms. If you look at what in fact is actually given to us within Scripture, there are actually two forms. One is in isolating disease, and the other is in the cleansing or in the diagnostic process. Now, it obviously becomes quite important that we do at least get some working knowledge of the subject of quarantine, because I would imagine that when we come into the world tomorrow, initially anyway, when the people are coming out of the Great Tribulation, we're going to have to put into effect many of these principles and laws that God has for us within Scripture. So it is an important subject in that regard. And it's interesting as well that the world itself has actually learned from the passage. Well, turn over to the passage. Leviticus 13. Turn over to Leviticus 13. And the world itself has in fact learned from these words in the time of the Black Death, the time of leprosy, and we'll look at that a little bit later. But in isolating disease, here in Leviticus chapter 13, notice in verse 45, it says, and the leper, this is Leviticus 13 verse 45, the leper in whom the plague is, his clothes shall be torn, his head bare, and he shall put a covering upon his upper lip and shall cry, unclean, unclean, so that other people would know what the problem was. And all the days in which the plague shall be in him, he shall be defiled. He is unclean. He shall dwell alone. Outside the camp shall his habitation be. So this was the isolation of disease that was to take place. And if you notice through about the entire passage here in Leviticus 13, it's the priest that was the one the leper had to go to be either pronounced clean or to be pronounced unclean. Remember Christ, when he healed 10 lepers, 9 of them disappeared to actually be checked over by the priest. One of them returned before he went and was checked over by the priest. But it was the priest that would actually have to check and see whether the leprosy was there or not. Now, when we look in fact at this job of the priest, we are to be priests and kings in the future. So if there is a place for this in the early part of the millennium, it'll be almost certainly down to our job to assess this. You know, we don't have to go into the same amount of detail here as we find here. And undoubtedly Christ will give us further information that is necessary. But the principles of isolating disease are valid principles. They're principles of God and certainly things that we can learn and use. When you look at the Black Death in Europe, it ran from around about 1350 to 1650 within Europe. Now, in the Middle East, it went on even beyond that. In fact, even as recently as the year 2000 and something, there was a case over in Madagascar. And because of the DNA analysis and so on, they actually found that it was a strain which was very similar to the Black Death of the time, you know, during the preponderance of the Black Death. You get different strains apparently, but it's only very, very recently that they actually determined what strain it was. But it ran in Europe, it ran 1350 to 1650. And at that same time, there was also leprosy in Europe as well. And leprosy was a big problem. Now, if there's one thing that the Catholic Church has done right, it is the fact that they looked up in Leviticus 13 and saw what was the instruction regarding leprosy, and they then implemented it in certain instances. Now, it's probably the only time they've actually taken scripture and implemented it, but they were in dire straits, and it worked. They isolated the leprosy, they quarantined the leprosy, and it actually worked, and it was successful. And people around them, therefore, saw how successful it was, and the Black Death was going through the Europe at the time, and they therefore sought to apply the principle to Black Death as well. And Dubrovnik in Croatia was the first place that actually had an island off the coast of Dubrovnik. And also Venice as well had an island, apparently, where the people used to be put in quarantine until they... In fact, it's the actual word quarantine itself comes from the Italian word for 40. And it's because when a ship came in from an area that perhaps had Black Death in it, it would be quarantined, and in other words, 40 days it would stand offshore until they checked and saw that no Black Death was on there, no plague was on there. And the similar kind of position, as far as obviously not Black Death, but Black Death would be applicable, but as far as the Church is concerned, the Pastor General's report of June the 4th, 1982. We had this sent around to everybody. It says, reminder about sick children. It is good to again remind the brethren not to go bring their children to services or church functions if they're ill. Now, again, we've got away from this, I think, to a large degree within the church. It was implemented within the church because we're not meeting regularly in church services, and we're having to log in over the internet. Perhaps we've got away from this. We need to bear this in mind when we look at the feasts, particularly, or in other instances where we do get together. Children with a bad cough or cold, measles, chickenpox, whooping cough, etc., should be under no circumstances brought in contact with other children. Any parent whose child has been in contact with another child who is later found to have measles should place their child in quarantine for at least 14 days to be certain whether or not he or she has contacted the disease. That's the case of measles. The similar things. Chickenpox, I think, is 7 days after the spots appear. They heal over, they scab over, and apparently they're not infectious thereafter. Any minister who notices a child at services or at other church-related functions and what appears to be a contagious illness should immediately ask the parents to take the child home. The basic underlying principle involved here is one of showing love to one another, certainly what God would expect of his people. And that's the category that really all of this comes under, is showing love to your neighbour. You love your neighbour as yourself, and therefore you would have the quarantine principle applied. And certainly in isolating the disease and making sure that the disease doesn't spread. And it's something we need to keep in mind for the time when we're going to have to be at the beginning of the millennium ruling and acting as priests, because it was the priest's job. It's part of the priest's job. Now, there's also the cleansing and diagnostic process also. Here in Leviticus 13, where we are, I want you to notice several verses. In verse 4, if the bright spot be white in the king, the skin of his flesh, then the priest shall shut him up. It doesn't mean to keep him quiet. It means shut him up in isolation, in quarantine, to see whether he has the plague for 7 days. So this was, again, part of the diagnostic process. And in verse 5 it says, and the priest shall look on the seventh day, and if the plague in his sight be to stay, and the plague is not spread in his skin, then the priest shall shut him up for another 7 days. So again, it's part of this process. And the quarantine was actually being used. You also find over in verse 21, same one, that if it's not lower than the skin, but somewhat dark, then the priest shall shut him up for another 7 days. And repeatedly mentioning that, having shutting the individual, putting him in quarantine for 7 days. Verse 31, for instance. If the priests look at the plague of the skull, behold, it's not in sight deeper than the skin, and there's no black hair in it, then the priest shall shut him up that has a plague on the skull 7 days. And in the seventh day, the priest shall look on the plague, and behold, if the skull hasn't spread, and if there's been in it no yellow hair, and the skull is not in the sight deeper than the skin, then he shall be shaven, but the skull shall not shave. and the priest shall shut him up that has a scar for another 7 days. In the seventh day, the priest shall look on his scar, and behold, if the scar has not spread in the skin and is in sight deeper than the skin, the priest shall pronounce him clean, and he shall wash his clothes and be clean. So this is part of the diagnostic, and it's also part of the cleansing process. Because again, the washing of, and notice the washing of clothes there. It's something that you'll find that is a great deal more than leprosy involved here when we look at so many things, so many illnesses. If you think back, 1854, Florence Nightingale was in Crimea and doing her rounds and cleaning up the filth that the soldiers were having to endure. But the reason why she was clearing up all the filth was not because of bacteria. They didn't know about bacteria. This was, 1854, but 1850, that's only 100 years before I was born. I was born in 1950. So 100 years before, they had no idea about bacteria. It was 1862 that Pasteur patented the pasteurization process. So 1862 that occurred. So Florence Nightingale reckoned it was miasma that was causing the problems. In other words, the muck coming out, the air that was coming out of the sewers. And partly it was, but it was bacteria that would be drafted on that air. And you're looking at 1847, all around this same time, Simon Weiss was washing his hands in the hospital, maternity hospitals in Venice. And he was being ridiculed for it. But he was bringing down the puerperal fever, also known as childhood fever. He recognized how contagious it was. And he cut the incidence from one in six women died that actually went into that hospital, down to one in 40 within one year, and down to about one in 80 the following year. Yet the physicians, because they used to go ahead and handle the, somebody would die one day, they'd go into a mortuary, and the physicians would go in there, and without washing their hands, without doing anything, they would work on the cadavers and show their students all the bits and pieces, poke around, without washing their hands, then go and examine the women. And obviously they died in great numbers. And yet just by putting washing facilities there, Simon Weiss, and washing his hands, stopped that in its tracks. And then he put washing facilities between each bed so they didn't pass from one bed to another. And the physicians were in uproar, absolute uproar, that they had to wash their hands every time before handling a patient. Now, if you go over to Numbers chapter 19, as I say, it's part of the cleaning and diagnostic process, is quarantine. Is used. But here in Numbers 19, notice in verse 11, it says, "He that touches the dead body of any man shall be unclean for 7 days." So it wasn't just a case of washing your hands when you touched a cadaver. It was a case of being unclean and remaining unclean and in a different state for 7 days, almost in a semi-quarantine state. Notice over in verse 14, "And this is the law: when a man dies in a tent, all that come into the tent and all that in the tent shall be unclean 7 days, whether they touch him or not." The fact is that it must have touched certain parts that have been touched by him. "And every open vessel that has no covering upon it is unclean. And whatsoever touches one that is slain with a sword in the open fields, or a dead body, or a bone of a man, or a grave, shall be unclean for 7 days." Now this was a ceremonial uncleanness, but the principles involved they even caused the Jews to be persecuted during the Black Death, because they had a certain degree of hygiene that the rest of the society didn't have. Notice also that it says, "And for an unclean person, they shall take the ashes of the burnt heifer of purification." This is the red heifer, which we're all waiting for down in Jerusalem at this present time. "And running water," notice, "and put therein into a vessel." So part of the purification process was involved in running water as well, spring water, living waters, as actually the original says. And verse 19, the clean person shall sprinkle on the ashes, sprinkle upon the unclean the third day, and on the seventh day, and on the seventh day he shall purify himself and wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and shall be clean at even. So notice, it's not even, as Simon Weiss implemented, it was just a case of washing hands. But in the case of God's instance, it's a case of washing hands, yes, but also of letting time go between and drying properly. And it's that drying process that is seems to be so crucial. And many of the problems that you find in hospitals today with MRSA and various other things, the drying process isn't there. They've implemented the washing, they've got all the various gels and everything else, but they haven't got the drying process. And yet it's the drying process that puts the bacteria into a different state and allows the bacteria to be washed, to be blown off the surfaces by the air drying in so many cases. And in verse 21, and it shall be a perpetual statute upon them that he that sprinkles the water of separation shall wash his clothes. So it's not just the one that is, in fact, is unclean, but the one that actually comes near him to assess the situation was also to wash his clothes. And notice, he washes clothes as well, and he that touches the water of separation shall be unclean till even. So it's not even just a case of washing hands, it's a case of washing clothes also. So, as I say, we are indeed to become priests and kings and priests in the future. And we'll be administering God's law by its spirit, by its intent, and not the letter. But you know, there is a principle of quarantine, and that principle of quarantine is very clear. It's found within Scripture, it's something that we need to be aware of. It's something that we do not, we don't go out and sacrifice a heifer and get the ashes and sprinkle water around and all the rest of it. That's past with the sacrifice of Christ. But the principles involved, the cleanliness involved, and the air drying also that is there, that you find in the washing of clothes. When people get sick, when people are contagious, it's also, it's very worthwhile that we should at least recognize that the principle of quarantine is clear. And that there are two forms that you find within Scripture. One is in isolation of the disease, but the other is the cleansing of the diagnostic process.